It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Staring out at us with his yellow eyes. He had yellow eyes, so help me God, yellow eyes.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Sozi.
He's on that Twitter.
On that Twitter thing. And we also have a blog, which maybe we'll update this week.
Oh, I updated it last week during the show.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now we have to actually...
a picture of Haterade.
Which I drink every week.
Yep.
That's what the show is fueled on, apparently. Anyway, we have a blog that you can check out at...
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The man picking out audio from one of the most overrated films in cinema. That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep. That's old. I did that last year.
Yeah, I know, because it's that time of year.
It
where
is that time of year.
That film has to be shown.
You know what time of year it is also?
It's time for WFYI members and, I'm sorry, WFYI employees to put up Christmas decorations throughout the building.
No, I was not going there, but I was saying it is the time of the year when fudge is in abundance.
See, give Curtis.
It is.
Give Curtis a rest.
So many jokes, so little.
Have we? Let's introduce our guest, and then we'll get into the non-movie portion of film sociology. And of course, sitting in, and for the record, I believe it was Wednesday morning,
yes.
About 9 a.m. No, it wasn't nine. Probably like 11.
No, it wasn't nine. I wasn't that good.
I wasn't here.
Yeah.
I don't think you were here either. But I think it was about 11 a.m. Wednesday morning when I asked one of our regulars to be a part of the show, not as a substitute, but as a legitimate guest, as opposed to the illegitimate guest we have out there. So, ladies and gentlemen,
Lawrence of Arabia, he's an English guy, he came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there, that's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it, doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music, it's music.
Hey, I've seen the movie four times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
talking about? There are no words to that. Did you hear what I was singing earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
Yep.
Mike Perry's in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm feeling very legitimate today. Thank you.
It still cracks
great
us up.
Great to be back.
It's always great to have you back. Always
Thank
good.
You.
Okay, so Mr. Slagle and I, well, we debate over lots of things that are not really airworthy, but this one in particular... I had the show.
It's a heated and continuing debate.
Continuing debate because time keeps on moving and big wheels keep on rolling. But you say, Mr. Slagle, that fudge is a seasonal treat.
It is.
Now, as somebody who grew up in the fine state of Michigan, there is fudge all over the place, 24/7, 365, 366 every 4 years.
Matt, what zip code are we in right now?
Oh, is that it? You gotta be.
It's seasonal and regional.
You gotta be from Indiana or get out. Love it or leave it. Is that it? Really? We're doing that?
No.
Indianapolis Zionist Zonophobia? Really? Well, peppermint is a flavor that's available 24/7, and of course you countered with yes, but not in candy cane form, right? So we started this last year, and then I believe it was around March when I brought in fudge from Marsh, an Indiana grocery store, and you ate it.
I thought you got it from some chocolatier, chocolatery in Richmond.
Oh, because I'm the buy local D-bag. Is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Well, I
but,
am.
No,
but.
But, yeah, no, it's good, though. It's good, though, because you bring me square donuts, and you can only get square donuts in Richmond and Bloomington.
Yes. But that has nothing to do with, you know what, donuts, year-round.
Yeah, donuts are, oh, no question.
No question about that. But, and we'll get to the donut discussion later.
Yeah,
but...
though a certain donut establishment refuses to be open on Sundays, which, it's like buying beer in this state. When do you ever
want
beer?
Or is it Chick-fil-A? They don't like the gays.
When do you ever want beer? You want it on Sunday. When do you ever want donuts? Sunday morning. I mean, really? I want donuts a lot. But...
You do. And, you know, because of your shape, we hate you for it.
Yeah. Which store are we talking about that's not open on Sundays?
It rhymes with?
Rhymes with Baylor's.
Okay.
No, it's actually Don Baylor's, former baseball player and Cubs manager, Don Baylor's Donuts. Mickey Lolich has a donut shop in Detroit. Speaking of retired ball
talking players. About Michigan again.
Yeah, I am.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around square donuts. So.
It's good because the donuts are actually square, so you can pack more donut in a box. Because if they're circles, you know, you get that gap between the donuts. Mm-hmm. With the square donuts, you don't have that.
Yeah. And Mr. Slagle also takes umbrage with a custard filling.
Yeah, you don't do that. That's
yes, you do
no.
that.
Some people do that, and those
yeah,
people
that, and
are
that
wrong.
Is
those
the host
people
of film,
are wrong.
And he's the host of film sociology. Now, on the flip side, I have nothing against cream-filled donuts. Heavens no. But
you won't eat them.
Yes, I do eat them. I do eat them. I give them to you.
You're, okay.
Oh, what?
No, yeah, you don't eat them. But, you give them to me.
Yeah, because that's what you like. You think I'm going to be a jerk and bring you a custard-filled donut?
I don't know. Maybe.
No, that's what the movie bets are for.
You didn't make me watch The Exorcist when I said that you better not make me
no.
watch The Exorcist.
No, yeah. I didn't. So I'm not a complete jerk.
Yeah.
Partial. So
but
I guess
what's up with the yellow eyes? That's what I'm.
Oh, jeez, I'll get to that. But you're with me. You're with me on that. I think Christmas Story is vastly overrated. And what's interesting is I don't say it's the worst film ever made. Not even close.
No.
Far from. It's not even the worst Bob Clark film ever made. But there was such a strong reaction, especially by people on the interwebs, that treat you as if you hate America and you hate cinema because you don't like that film.
Or The Breakfast Club. Or
I was in high school when I was like, man, forget John Hughes. I know he's dead and all, but I don't need his movies.
I don't really care about The Breakfast Club.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
It was, you know what? It was in the 80s. And in the 80s?
It was a different time.
Different time, yeah. Jerk. As you can see, there's nothing new to talk about in cinema.
No.
because nobody wanted to see the new Gerard Butler movie where his ex-wife is Jessica Biel, and he's getting sought after by Judy Greer, Catherine Zeta-Jones,
he's a soccer
and
coach,
Uma Thurman.
Ex-soccer player, right?
Yeah, ex-soccer player. So.
Yeah, I'm sitting here comparing times, you know, show times between that and the Brad Pitt movie.
This, Killing Him Softly?
To coordinate, you know, taking my lovely wife to the cinema and saying, there's Gerard. I'll see you after I'm done with Brad.
She wants to. So the marm wants to watch. I'm sorry. The marm wants to look at Gerard Butler.
Yes.
Okay. And to be fair, Killing Him Softly is directed by the gentleman who gave us the assassination of Jesse James mm-hmm. by the coward Robert Ford. So there's that going for it.
Yes.
So
you know,
yeah,
I'm in the mood for some bloody violence before Christmas.
There you go.
So I'm thinking checking out Killing Them Softly this week.
Wasn't it this time last year that Hobo with a Shotgun came out? Speaking of
no,
bloody
that
violence?
Was that was out. That was out earlier in the year. It came out on Blu-ray, which I own. Yeah, because I need to see Mike's favorite scene with crisp, clear sound and picture.
Yeah.
Hey, it got Rutger Hauer a starring role, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Even if a busload of kids have to burn, it's a sacrifice.
I was watching it on Stars the other day. I mean, it's a classic.
It's a low budget grindhouse movie if there ever was one. Kobe's looking it up right now.
No, I'm no. Mike's got that fancy cable.
What?
I got the U-verse. I don't know how fancy it is. But.
So, yeah, that opened. Does Fair Sweet Bianca want to look at Gerard Butler?
No, actually, we were having lunch. We met for lunch today, and want to go see a movie this weekend? Because haven't.
And, of course, all of our spouses sound like our voices. Yeah. Only slightly higher.
Yeah.
Johnny's disgusting. That's my favorite. She wrote about The Room. But go on.
There was a stretch where we were at the movies, like, doing matinees Saturday, Sunday morning for every week for maybe, like, a month or two.
That's what newlyweds do.
And, but, no, nothing. Nothing.
I don't want to see that. So, that's okay. So, also opening today is Smashed, which I've been hearing really good things about, especially from some of my fellow members of the IFJA. We are working on the awards ceremony portion of that. What did Fair Sweet Bianca think of Anna Karenina?
Oh, it was amazing.
Was it?
He's quoting.
Good. It was so good.
He's quoting. amazing. Okay. I think good, not great.
Yeah. And
it looks cool. It looks really cool. I think. Okay. Dr. Sosa, film therapist, is already in the house. It's wow. And it's only 5'11". That's good.
I wondered what the deal was with the couch when I came in.
Yes. No, that's not a couch. Kobe has informed us that there are certain we can't use your actual phrase because we're on radio, but the costume dramas.
Yes.
Especially of an English nature. An English guy fighting the Turkish. You'll watch that.
He's an English guy.
You need to actually show her Lawrence of Arabia.
I thought you were going to say Hollywood Nights.
Well, yeah, you should show her Hollywood Nights as well. That's just tremendous.
Yeah.
That's one of the official films of the Film Sociology Library,
that's,
I believe.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need
a library in here?
No. For the blog, Film Sociology Library.
Oh,
essentials.
Yeah.
You mean like the AFI?
Yes.
Oh, let's do that for 2013. Oh, let's
that'll
do
be
that.
Fun.
Can I have my own shelf?
The Mike Perry shelf. Yes.
Oh, so we'll
absolutely
do like, all right, so now we're doing, we're brainstorming instead of doing a show. Staff picks.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
There it is.
And we'll put trailers up on the blog.
Yep.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, for 2013, we will
tune into the blog next year. Forget about this year.
And we don't have time for dead people we don't like. All right. So we'll work on staff picks for 2013. So that will include some of our regulars like Lawrence of Arabia and the Twilight correspondent. That would be Fair Sweet Bianca.
Yep. We got to get the Michiganders in on this now.
Yeah. I have to see if we can. She's really good at recording her reviews. We see if we can get a link to Haunted Flower.
Yep.
HauntedFlower.com. So, okay. So, but has she said that she's asked you if you wanted to see Anna Karenina?
No.
And you haven't told her?
Mm-mm.
So she hasn't asked, so you're not answering.
No.
Don't ask, don't tell.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. I'm not bringing up a movie that I don't want to see.
Really?
Yeah.
Unless I bring it up. Jerk face.
Unless you antagonize.
That's another way of saying bring it up. All right, so there is that. Of course, Hitchcock is still in theaters. That's always a lot of fun. Now that you've seen Psycho, you can handle watching Hitchcock.
Yeah.
So,
watch a movie about the making of a freaky movie.
Yes, but the movie itself is not freaky.
Yeah.
This movie, not the movie they're making.
Yeah.
Did you think Psycho was freaky? That's a little freaky.
It's a little bit freaky. Yeah.
Good freaky.
It's. Well, There is no good freaky.
Oh,
I disagree, sir.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of good freaky.
Okay.
We can't talk about it on the show, but yes, there is good freaky.
There's no. No. You don't. No. Just no.
No, but I remember the first time I saw Psycho, I was a kid. It was on late night TV, and the reveal at the end just freaked me out for a long time.
That's a great reveal. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, that, and for me, the biggest moment for me in that was when, I think it's the first time the guy's going into the house, and he's going up the stairs.
Slowly.
Yeah.
Martin Balsam.
Yeah,
Balsam.
He's going up the stairs, and you see him from behind walking up the stairs, and then he gets to the top, or like the very last stair, and then the camera is up high looking down, and then like the guy just walks out of the door, stabs him, walks back.
Mrs. Bates.
Yeah.
Don't say, way to give it away. Way to give away a 50-year-old film.
Yeah. You do it all the time.
I know I do. Yeah, that's from Freaky Stuff.
Sorry. You do it all the time.
We're talking like teenagers. So that is still there. Life of Pi, I still highly recommend. definitely seeing. Definitely worth seeing in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the only 3D film worth seeing in 3D this year. Yes.
Okay.
Werner Herzog. Speaking of 3D.
Yes.
I think I'm going to have to risk the headache to see The Hobbit. What's that new format they're doing?
Oh, that's next week. Oh, yeah. What is this?
Spence around?
Something. They adjust the speed of the film or something, and it's giving people headaches.
Oh, I don't want to get
headaches. What's different about it?
I'm not quite sure. I'm not a techie, so I don't understand all the.
Why don't you look it up?
But look it up.
It's a film show. We're brainstorming on the show. You know, why not have you do searches while we're doing the show? It's not the first time
it's
ever
happened before.
Yeah, it's not happened before.
But any movie that you know is giving people migraines, I got to at least check out once.
So, Mike Perry, what have you watched recently?
The last thing I saw in a theater was Lincoln.
And?
I loved Lincoln. The movie was just great. I love that it wasn't so much a biopic as it was the story of that amendment getting passed.
Correct.
And I love a good political drama, and then this was one of the better political dramas I've seen in a long time.
Well written, well good
Tommy
crew
Lee
of actors.
Jones just about steals the movie out from under Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, I can't remember who wrote it. Might have been The Onion, but they said, you know, with all the restraint that he had in Hope Springs, he just kicks a barn door open and this is the Tommy Lee Jones we all know and love. He's just, how should I put it, fire and vinegar. I know I'm mixing my metaphors, but yeah.
And it was just a character actor festival. I mean, I've seen him. I've seen him.
Lucas Haas is in the very first scene, and then my favorite trio. Tim Blake Nelson, John Hawks, and James Spader.
Oh, my God.
Welcome back to Movies, Mr. Spader.
Oh, and I believe he could be responsible for the return of the twirly mustache.
The Raleigh fingers?
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Because I'm not doing it.
He really rocked that mustache, I thought.
You didn't grow one for November, therefore you hate cancer research.
I can't do it.
That's okay.
I get, like...
You get what
I get a week and a couple days in and just get so itchy. And
then you're told it's scruffy. I don't like it.
It's scratchy.
And seeing Sally Field and Tommy Lee together first time since what? Backroads, was that?
Backroads. Yeah. Yes. One of the lesser known Martin Ritt films. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Wow.
I just totally loved it. I mean, I thought it was a great historical piece and like I said, one of the better political movies I've seen.
James Strathairn, Hal Holbrook.
Jared Harris.
Always love Jared Harris. Oh gosh, I had a brain freeze, which is great to do on the radio. Jackie Earle Haley.
It was all I could do to keep from yelling D-Day when Bruce McGill.
Love Bruce McGill.
It's a good old Hollywood movie.
You know what? It actually, now that you mention it, it is.
Yeah. I think it'll run away with a bunch of awards. I think Lincoln's the movie to beat this season.
I think you're right. That's we'll see. You got an update over there, Cobe?
Yeah.
What do they say?
On The Hobbit.
It's based off of what news source?
Washington Post.
Okay.
Actually.
We cite our sources.
That's yes. Bibliography.
Because we make nothing up here.
Hey, Red Clay's a great album. Shut up.
Yeah. The thing is... he's going 48 images per second, higher frame rate, so doubling the 24 frames per second.
And that's causing headaches.
That's causing headaches, apparently, and doing this to make everything crystal clear. And apparently...
Not crystal Bernard. That
no. What I'm getting from this, it looks like there's going to be three different ways that you can see this. You can see this standard, you can see this 48, and then also 3D, which will have the 48
included. And that's so the 3D and 48 is what's causing the headaches?
It must be.
Okay.
So I'm taking next Friday off, so I'm thinking of catching an early matinee.
Uh-huh. Give us a report on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do a phoner.
We need a phone.
Oh.
That's next.
Okay.
Sorry, that's another 2013 goal.
I'll tell you what. I'll call you after I see it.
Oh, great.
I just talked to Mike, and I'll come down if you want to report.
No, this is when you take the phone, you put it up to the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's college radio, if there ever was one. The very first show ID I ever got was from McIntyre Murphy. And this is when I had my radio show at the Ball State University. And I did an interview with Matt Murphy on micro recorder. On a mini recorder, and I played it right up against a microphone with a show ID. That is really sad. But in 1992, it was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So there.
That was high tech then.
That was high tech then. All right. So, yeah, the other reason besides not seeing Playing for Keeps and Smashed was last night, new play I'm directing opened at Anderson University at Byram Hall. It is the 1940s radio production of It's a Wonderful Life. So it's the famous Christmas classic done by five actors, one actor playing George, one actor playing Mary, and then two men and a woman playing all the other roles with a sound effects table, with a piano, and an applause sign. And it's done as if it's a radio broadcast from the late 40s. And it is a lot of fun. It's happening tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m., 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, and then the next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Anderson University. Well, we're checking out a lot of fun.
Cool.
So, all right, let's take a short break, and we'll talk about what is. You know, I think we'll get to the interview, and then we'll talk about what is on DVD and Blu-ray. We'll go into the archives. We'll probably talk about Dead People We Like, or a variation of Dead People We Like, because of my movie pile. And more brainstorming on the air. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Anything about either one of them.
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
And I think I said before the break, we'll talk about DVDs later, but we played that now. Welcome to Film Sociology.
Oh, that's
that's what
I
was saying.
I don't know. I was...
You were listening.
He's still punch drunk from Pledge.
I was doing stuff.
Yeah, listening's a skill. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msosi@wfyi.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. Hanging out with Mike Perry and Kobe Slago. It's like the triple and the classes on Friday. Yeah, I just want to go. Bars are too – it's too early for to go hit the bars. Too, you know, there's nobody there. Okay. But we'll get to DVDs and Blu-rays in a little bit. Blu-rays. But there was a screening earlier this week of a documentary which was going to be aired on PBS in early 2013. And it's a documentary called Age of Champions, which follows several senior citizen athletes of different backgrounds and sports and stories. And I believe we have Age of Champions loaded up so you can hear a little bit about the filmmakers. And then you'll hear an interview I did with producer Keith Aquat. So do we have... The file that says Age of Champions, Kobe.
to see that's what I was doing.
Is that what you're
I'm
doing?
Ready to go here.
He's yeah. ready. So, yeah. All right, here's a little trailer behind the scenes audio of Age of Champions.
And we are Southern Tigerettes.
Yay! I'm Chris Rufo, director of Age of Champions. When we first heard about the Senior Olympics, it was kind of a light bulb moment. And once we started actually meeting the people that participate, the Tatum brothers from D.C., the Tigerettes from Louisiana, Adolph, the cowboy pole vaulter from Texas, we knew that if we could capture these personalities, that we'd have something special.
So on one of our first shoots, we were in Cape Cod. We had just met Roger Gentilhomme, the 100-year-old tennis player. And we decided that let's challenge Roger to a little match. And we realized quickly that Roger had a couple tricks up his sleeve. And we ended up actually losing the match, and it was a humbling moment.
What I think is really special about the message of the film is that despite old age, losing a spouse, fighting cancer, the athletes that we've chosen decided to keep pursuing their dreams. They decided that no matter what age you are, you can accomplish something great.
It's been really exciting to go through 2 years of creating this and now have the opportunity to share the film with communities across the country and hear people react to the film and laugh and sometimes cry. And it's one of the most rewarding parts of the process.
The outreach campaign is basically our effort to get the film into as many hands as possible. So we're working with organizations in health, aging, fitness, that are using the film as a tool to inspire their members and to engage with the wider community.
And if you'd like to learn more about bringing the film to your community, visit our website, ageofchampions.org/host.
So there's a little bit of background about the making of the movie. So here from earlier this week, my interview with producer, Age of Champions producer, Keith Aquat.
So Age of Champions is a documentary that features a handful of athletes that compete in the Senior Olympics. We followed a 100-year-old tennis player, an 87-year-old pole vaulter, his arch rival who's 89, a team of grandmother basketball players in their 60s and 70s, and two swimmers in their late 80s, one of whom is battling cancer as he competes.
How did you come about with this?
Well, you know, it was a very serendipitous way that we learned about the Senior Games and therefore decided to make a film. My film partner and I, the director and I, we were both in our late 20s, and we had never heard of the Senior Games. We both follow sports, we're both active, yet we had never heard about this competition where athletes who are 50 to 100 plus compete, dive, sprint, pole vault for gold, silver, and bronze medals. And when we heard about it through a conference for nonprofits in the arts, we knew we had to make a film, so we immediately got started.
I say, when exactly did you start?
So Age of Champions has been in the making for about 2.5 years. We first heard about the Senior Games in the middle of 2009, and then we were very lucky because the Senior Olympics was happening later that year. So we actually began production, followed some of the characters as they were training to compete in the Nationals, and we followed them at the national competition later in 2009. We did some more filming in 2010, and then editing took us into last year. And since then, we've been screening the film across the country. We have our Indianapolis premiere coming up, and we're doing screenings all across the country. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been really exciting to get the message out about active aging to audiences around the country. So Age of Champions is actually going to broadcast nationally on PBS.
Okay.
So check your local listings on your PBS station. We're going to broadcast in July, late July. That's when the next Senior Olympics takes place. So we're partnering with the Senior Olympics. As they're taking place again, we'll be broadcasting.
I mean, how many athletes did you have to choose from to get to the ones that you had for the film?
That's a great question. You know, there's over 300,000 senior athletes who compete in state, local, and national competitions. when we found out about the games, we partnered with the Senior Olympics Association, and they sent out a casting call to all of the athletes that were signed up for the Nationals. We had over 1,000 responses to our casting call. And, you know, really as we sifted through all the responses, it was a tough decision because there's so many great stories out there, so many inspirational athletes. But we were really happy with the characters that we ended up choosing. You know, we wanted the diversity of sports, ages, you know, race, sex, and you know, really kind of mix it up and try to have a set of characters that represent as many people across the country as possible.
Now, when you were originally talking about some of the athletes, I heard you say arch rivals. Tell us about this rivalry and how long has it been going on?
You know, it's funny. It's funny how few things change as you get older, it seems. You know, there's this kind of schoolyard rivalry between two characters in the film. One, Adolf Hoffman. He's an 87-year-old pole vaulter from South Texas, from San Antonio.
Wow.
And then his arch rival is 89. He's from North Texas, Dallas. So they've got that that Texas rivalry, and they've been competing against each other for years. But you know, really, it's always neck and neck. I don't want to spoil it for your listeners, but there's you know, Adolf is typically the favorite when they compete, but Earl is always looking for that advantage. Maybe Adolf's got a cold, or maybe he's not quite on his game, and so it's a really funny and heartwarming rivalry. Very good natured.
Okay.
You know, one thing I would say about these senior athletes is that they're each other's biggest cheerleaders. You know, they know what each other's going through to compete. The aches and the pains, you know, they're no different than any other older adult. You know, they're going through arthritis issues. They're battling cancer. They're handling, you know, deceased spouses. You know, they're getting past all these challenges with grace and dignity, but then they're also getting out on the field and competing.
Well, first off, that's a whole different Friday Night Lights that I think is worth checking out. but also, you answered another question. I wondered, even though they are older, do we still have the stereotype of the raging D-bag athlete? And it sounds like you don't have them in this film.
Well, you know, people have different opinions of different characters in our film. I would certainly not describe any of our characters that way, but
asking you to. I was not baiting. So, but I kept thinking if there was a senior version of the guy from A Fistful of Quarters, the King of Kong, which hopefully there is not.
Well, you know, there's something close. One of the groups of characters in our film, the Tigerettes, they are. Six-time national champions in basketball.
They're the Lakers.
They're the Lakers. They've got the dynasty going on.
Or the Heat, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, or the Heat, I guess. Yeah, I guess it changes. But you know, the Tigerettes are the ladies that everyone loves to hate. They've got the big target on their back. They're the ones that everyone wants to take down, and you know what? No one can. And sometimes people come close, but they don't, and people just hate them even more for it because, you know, the Tigerettes, they're unabashedly the best. And but that's what makes it exciting. You know, it's a funny juxtaposition to see these women who are in their 60s and 70s, and we're so used to older adults being so humble and being so and sort of docile in a way. But, you know, these Tigerettes, they're feisty. They dive for balls. They throw elbows. They're going for the basket. They're going for the rebound, and nothing's going to stop them. I don't want to spoil too much from the film, but you know, there are times when the competitors get in the way of the Tigerettes. They're going away in a stretcher, and we captured some of that in the film.
Well, how many basketball teams are there in this league?
There's hundreds. There's
really?
Hundreds across the country. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, you know, the senior games are the best kept secret in sports. Like I said, over 300,000 senior athletes compete. There's a women's senior basketball league. Hundreds of teams across the country come together, different age groups. You know, we've done filming with, you know, obviously the characters in our film who are in their 60s and 70s, but also there's granny basketball teams that are where all the players are in their 90s and they're still getting around playing ball. And it's a lot of fun.
You just made me feel more of a sloth than I already am. That's, you know, and I hope you feel the same way.
You know, it's funny. I don't like admitting this too often, but the 100-year-old tennis player actually challenged the director and I to a match. At the time, we were 27 years old, both in good shape. We're both pretty athletic, obviously not tennis players, because we got on the court with this 100-year-old and his 94-year-old doubles partner, and they creamed us.
That sounds like the Bill Cosby bit about handball at the Y with the really old guy who just tears them apart.
Technique.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, people make fun of rock musicians getting old, but there's, you know, not just rock, but even before that, you know, there are jazz and blues artists that are playing and that are well into their 90s, and nobody even thinks about it.
It's amazing. You know, I think that one of the big takeaways for me in making this film was that you really don't need to box yourself in what you can do. And I think that's one of the biggest impediments to living a full and active life for a lot of older adults is not believing that you can. I mean, a lot of the characters in our film and senior athletes that we met and the musicians that you're talking about and, you know, people that do great and amazing things and accomplish great things even in, you know, later in life, they believe that they can, and they work hard to do so. They're not letting life slip through their fingers, and you know, while they're rocking away in a rocking chair, you know, they're really active. They're very engaged. They set goals, and they work hard to accomplish them. And if people get in their way, they'll step over them. And we've seen that. You know, you'll see that in our film, and I've seen it time and time again in making this movie. And it's really inspiring for someone my age.
You kind of answered one of my questions, but I was wondering, was there anybody else that challenged you to feats of strength and athleticism?
You know, after that humbling experience with Roger beating us, you know, there were other times when opportunities arose, and I will admit I was a bit more measured in accepting of the challenge. You know, Adolf, the pole vaulter, he wanted to show us how to pole vault, and I'd never pole vaulted. We were in the middle of a shoot, and I couldn't risk, you know, breaking something, so I actually chickened out. So I really tip my hat to, you know, the characters in the film, but all the senior athletes, because they, you know, they really take risks. I mean, can you imagine pole vaulting in your late 80s, the strength, but also the wear and tear on your body, you know, landing and falling, and you can really tear yourself up. So I have a lot of respect for these people.
Now, have any of them gone to the festival circuit with you?
Absolutely, yeah. We've had some really, you know, we've had over 800 screenings of Age of Champions around the country, and, you know, a number of them have been at film festivals. We've shown at film festivals across the country, across Europe, New Zealand, Australia, and it's been very well received. We've done some events with live pole vaulting with Adolf. We've done events where, you know, the characters will arrive in a limo with the red carpet, and it's a lot of fun. And right now what we're doing is a 20-state theatrical screening tour that's funded by AARP. They've got a campaign going on called You've Earned a Say, and they've invited Age of Champions and us filmmakers to screen the film across the country in settings like we've done in Indianapolis and across the country. What we're doing is we're showing the film, having the filmmakers do a Q&A, question and answer with the audience, but then also AARP talks about their efforts to keep older adults and the whole community engaged together. And the You've Earned a Say campaign is all about reform to Medicare and Social Security and how to stay engaged in that conversation. So it's a really exciting thing to get to show the film and have an impact and engage with communities around the country. We're having a great time.
So do you have a next film project lined up after this?
Yeah, we're working on another film, another one for PBS. It's about a baseball team in Western China, and so we're really kind of varying topics we'll take on. So, so you know, we're keeping ourselves real busy, but for the time being, we're going to be, and for the next year, we'll really be busy with Age of Champions, doing these screening events, finishing up our You've Earned a Say AARP screenings, and then getting ready for our national PBS broadcast when the next Senior Olympics take place.
And you make people think twice about Willie Mays with the Mets and Michael Jordan with the Wizards.
I don't want to discourage anyone from getting out there and you know, challenging themselves. It's amazing what these people can do. It's amazing what people can do in general if you think you can and work towards it.
Keith Aquat, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and good luck with the tour.
Thank you, Matthew.
So, yeah, you can go to ageofchampions.com and see some clips from Age of Champions. And we'll play that interview again when it gets to be aired on PBS. So this is Film Sociology. I'm Matthew Sosi, hanging out with Kobe Slagle and Mike Perry. It's a very loose Friday, getting ready for a grown-up movie. Well, we're in the middle of grown-up movie season, so we need to do some catching up on a few miscellaneous topics. For instance, Mike Perry has not heard my audio chestnut to give to Kobe Slagle. This is a new segment, which will get longer with each recurring segment, we hope. But this is a little thing I like to call What Makes Kobe Ill.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Padma. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Gail, how are you?
Good. I'm glad. I'm great.
Yes, you're glad and great. You're glad and great. Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. All you gotta tell me now is wow, wow, wow.
Three.
Yeah, just terrible. Just awful.
So you don't like me gushing over guests like Padma Lakshmi?
Oh, hi, Padma. Hi, Gail.
And Gail Kim, a.k.a. Mrs. Irvine.
Oh, hi.
Yes, I will not talk to attractive women like Tommy Wiseau. I already do that enough at home. I already have my daughter going, oh, hi, Daddy. That's bad enough. And, of course, you don't like Mr. Krall. That's Elvis Costello.
Right.
And anytime we talk about sports and I want to be a raging D-bag to Mr. Slagle, I will bring up the number of titles that the Pistons have won, which is the number three.
Three.
So those are things that make Kobe violently ill. So there's that.
I sense a special next year.
That will not make the highlight reel. I
no,
think.
that'll go in the highlight show this year.
All right, we'll see. Okay, couple things I want to talk about. Well, first off, there's the new on DVD, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, boy.
So you really liked it.
I really liked it.
Okay, I liked it. Didn't love it. 30 minutes too long.
I get that.
It feels like Christopher. There's a big stretch where it feels like Christopher Nolan's Red Dawn. Which uh-huh. which doesn't help that there's a remake of Red Dawn that nobody asked for.
I think Jarrett said it very well when he said, talking about Dark Knight Rises, that it's a good movie, whereas The Dark Knight is a great movie.
I agree. Yeah. Good, not great. Yeah. So, you know, Anne Hathaway's having a lot of fun. She looks like she's the only one that's having fun in that film.
Well, she wants to do it again.
Of course she does. Who wouldn't?
She's the one talking about doing a Catwoman movie now.
Well, and we're all for it, right?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
We're Universal. Film Sociology endorses.
We'll have a survey here. Everyone, show of hands.
That's a three.
One, three. Yes,
that's
okay.
Three.
Unanimous.
Yep. Unanimous. Film Sociology wholeheartedly endorses an Anne Hathaway Catwoman movie. So get on it, Warner Brothers. There's that. Okay, so that's out. Odd Life of Timothy Green. Which Emma liked that. Although
yes.
I think it's, you know what, it's a film where Jennifer Garner is married, and it's not to any of us.
Yeah.
So there's that. Hope Springs. Good. Speaking of Tommy Lee Jones, good year for Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
He got a big paycheck for doing not a whole lot in Men in Black 3. He's gonna get a nomination, a Best Supporting Actor nomination for Lincoln, and he got to work with Meryl Streep in Hope Springs, and he's restrained at times, but he's also some of the most vulnerable acting I've seen Tommy Lee Jones do. He is not one to show off his soft, sensitive side.
And it takes a while for him to get there in this, but
no.
he does get there.
And don't let the advertising deceive you. Yes, Steve Carell is in it, although not as much as you think. Elizabeth Shue is barely in this, and there's a couple of people, Mimi Rogers and her wide face, she's barely in this as well. It is, I'm sorry, I know some people find her attractive, I think she has a wide face, but this is the Meryl and Tommy show, mm-hmm. and they're really good together, and I like the fact that there is a film about grown-ups having to deal with marital issues.
Yeah.
So
it was a very good movie. It's not a movie you're used to seeing Tommy Lee Jones in.
No, and I think that's, you know, kudos.
Yeah.
And I think from his standpoint, because it's the director of Devil Wears Prada, but, you know, you get an offer to do a movie with Meryl Streep.
You can't say no.
You don't turn that down. No. So good for them. Both of them really, really strong in that. And a film that I finally got to watch recently, and I was really pleasantly blown away. It might be very high up on my list. Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Oh yeah, excellent. That little girl, if she's not nominated
and
for...
And I'm still trying to learn how to say her name, but this is a film, it'll hopefully get some buzz, but it's basically my way is, it's like if Dickens lived on the bayou.
Yeah, that's an excellent description.
There is a sub-region of people that live almost like in a shanty, you know, something that you would see in South America or in Africa, but it's in New Orleans and it's post Katrina New Orleans. And these are people that want to, and it's their area is called the Bathtub. And it's this girl. Yeah. We have the 7-year-old girl whose dad is not in the best of shape mentally or physically. And there's this village and they would rather stay there than go to a shelter or go into the real world. I mean, there's a great moment at the beginning where they are black and whites are partying and drinking and shooting off fireworks. And she says up in the dry world, they ain't got what we got. I mean, she's content in her existence.
Yeah, and it portrays America as a third world country.
It does.
But they kind of rise above it. And it's a very optimistic movie, I thought.
Absolutely.
Whereas Winter's Bone.
Yeah, nobody wants to stay there.
Yeah, was, you know, it kind of takes a look at the underbelly of America.
That nobody wants to see.
And it was a very depressing movie. But this is very uplifting.
I think this was a film that was equally, not depressing, but heartbreaking and inspiring at the same time. Of what these people, you know, they're like I said, they're very content in where they're living, and when things change via storm and the outside world, and you know, a father's health and the emotional status of a 70. I mean, this girl is really, really good in it. I'm gonna butcher it, so I apologize, but it's a.
I just go with that little girl.
Yeah, Quizon Wallace, I believe, and then her dad is played by Dwight Henry, who's also excellent. And I mean, it's out, and I know it played in town for a couple of weeks. And it's there isn't a beginning, middle, there is a kind of a beginning, middle, and end, but it's a slower paced film. It's not a slow film.
No,
it's not. And it's not Tree of Life as far as its pacing, but it's definitely worth checking out. And there is, yes, there's a big piece of symbolism that's used really, really well. But yeah, go rent that.
Yeah,
it's definitely worth checking.
Yes. Okay,
we got some old titles we'll get through. Not a whole, although I'm very excited because I just purchased Volume 25, Mystery Science Theater 3000. Man. This collection includes Robot Holocaust, Revenge of the Creature, which anybody knows, film debut of Clint Eastwood,
ooh,
a sequel to Revenge, which we watched on Spanguli, which of course is on MeTV Saturday nights at 10 o'clock. Rich, hope you're feeling better. Hope you're on the mend. Operation Kid Brother, starring Neil Connery. Yes, they made a spy movie. And yes, Miss Moneypenny's in it. Lois Maxwell is in it. Man. M is in it. The villain from Thunderball is in this, all to please Jason Connery. It's as great as it sounds. And Kitten with a Whip, a 1965 juvenile delinquent action drama. John Forsythe is terrorized by Anne Margaret. Lucky guy. So
yeah, I should be so terrorized.
I know. So yeah, so some of the old titles, good stuff to buy for the holiday season for everybody. Of course, the Dark Knight trilogy is put in some giant package. Finding Nemo in regular and 3D. So that's worth checking out. Criterion has put out Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Yay!
All the versions. The Terry Gilliam version, the studio version, and the butchered TV version. So if you want to see how people shouldn't touch an artist's work, that's worth checking out. If you're a fan of The Talented Mr. Ripley, the original story of that is out on Blu-ray from Criterion, Purple Noon with Alain Delon. Catch Me If You Can, is also on Blu-ray. Yes, really underappreciated Spielberg film with DiCaprio and Tom Hanks.
Amazing film.
Nobody asked for Hostel 1 and 2 on Blu-ray.
No, they did not.
No, they did not. And it's this, that's a bloody, scary movie. And no, a scary and bloody movie, and Kobe's not going to watch it. Finding Nemo is out on Blu-ray. Oh, I mentioned that. I wrote it down twice.
It's that good.
Yeah, it is, actually. Spy Kids 3D and The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
It's that bad.
I know. And there's a 5-film collection of Francis Ford Coppola. And I'm in, although I don't know about the choices. I think it's because of the studio who made it.
If any of them were not Godfather, I don't.
Well, no, it's not. Well, I don't think this is a Paramount collection. Well, wait a minute. It should be. Here's what they are. It is Apocalypse Now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Apocalypse Now Redux.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed Redux, but I don't think that counts.
I don't know why you need both.
Show the difference. Well, just like you would the Brazil box set. Yeah. So you can see 3 different versions. In this case, 2 different versions. So I don't count that as 2 films. I would count that as 1 if you're in a doubleheader. The Conversation, great film. One from the Heart, which I need to watch again. And I know that got slammed pretty hard when it first came out in 1981. But, Frederick Forrest and Terry Garr split up, and they wind up temporarily with Raul Julia and Nastasia Kinski, and it's music by Tom Waits and Crystal Gayle, I believe.
Okay. So, I retract my sneer.
There you go. And, yeah, you will. And Tetra, one of his later films, which I actually liked over Youth versus Youth. So those are out there as well. Now, I love my never-ending pile of DVD and Blu-rays that I've purchased or have been sent to me, and I have not watched them yet. And it's going to incorporate with some of the ones we normally around this time go into the archives, where somebody like Warner Brothers or Sony or MGM will put out movies that you can only buy on their website. You can't buy them in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it,
I'll burn it for like $5.
Only in their case, it's 15 to 20. Last week, I talked about the Kenneth Branagh film, A Midwinter's Tale, which has been referred to as Spinal Tap for the Shakespearean crowd. And it's a lot of fun. It's a nice little Valentine to just, going into an abandoned church and putting on a show. In their case, Hamlet on Christmas Eve.
Nice.
Well, that being said, I watched the 1969 film version of Hamlet. I know there are many, many others. This is the one that nobody thinks about. This is directed by Tony Richardson. Why are you laughing over there? Is it my snarkiness when I said that?
No, the one that nobody thinks about, but I don't think about any Hamlet.
Really?
Yeah.
How about Hamlet too?
You might like Hamlet. You
still Hamlet.
You have no interest in Shakespeare in films? Is this a different complaint?
Sadly, no, it's not a different complaint.
This is not the Victorian era?
No.
Okay.
It is. It falls into that category.
No, it does.
Yes, it does.
Classic literature made movies, so that's what your gripe is.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
You're so young.
Okay, all right. I'm moving on with what I was saying. This is one that's directed by Tony Richardson. Yes, of the Redgrave Richardsons. Yes. And it stars Nicole Williamson, for you fans of Excalibur, playing the title, the Dane. His stepfather, Claudius, played by Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
This was his follow-up. I think this is the film he made right after The Lion in Winter. So this is early in Hopkins' career. And playing Ophelia, to trying to cash in on the young crowd, Marianne Faithfull.
Ah,
so
I'm intrigued.
You are intrigued. So here, and I love this. Of course, Hamlet is played by 31-year-old Nicole Williamson. His stepfather is 32-year-old Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, it's and I'm sorry, I can't remember the actress who plays Gertrude, but apparently she was, I think, 5 when she had her son. It's one of those. And remind me to talk to you about Mrs. Soucy playing Mrs. Cratchit at IRT sometime on the street. It's very fun. But what's interesting about the film is, and I believe it was a national production, it was a stage production, and then they made it into a movie. Tony Richardson, who's directed a lot of things, most notably Tom Jones, not the singer, Kobe. It's another piece of classic literature you don't care about.
It's got Albert Finney in it, though, dude.
It does have young Albert Finney. But it is a film that's shot really up close with the actors. I think when you think of Hamlet, you think of the giant, dark, dank castle, and there's not a whole lot of that in this. It is more about focusing on the actors and the performances. And it takes a while to get used to being that close. I guess that's a sense of intimacy and voyeurism while watching this family drama unfold. So, interesting. Different than Olivier's, different than Branagh's, different than Gibson's, yeah. Different than anything else. And in the posters, of course, this was a year after Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, so they're calling it, you know, the other great love story of it, from the author of Romeo and Juliet, another love story. And there's a picture of Hamlet and Ophelia on the cover, and like, that's not the main story. So that is an archive piece. Also into the archives, last week we talked about the death of actor Larry Hagman, and one of his early films was in the archive pile, and I had a good reason to pull it out and watch it. The 1966 ensemble drama, The Group, directed by Sidney Lumet. It's based on a controversial novel written in the 30s that is apparently put it in the same shelf as Peyton Place. And it's about a group of girls, a group of young women, and the lives, you know, they're very close-knit in college, and it's their life after college between 1933 and 1941. And the novel and the film, this is 66, apparently is the most expensive film shot in New York at its time, and Lumet being a New York filmmaker,
right,
talked about such taboo subjects of its time as free love, contraception, abortion, breastfeeding, lesbianism, and mental illness. So, which I guess, yeah, quite.
Yeah, that's old school stuff.
Man. It is old school stuff, but if this stuff is written in a novel in the 30s.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's a mainstream film in the mid-60s while we're still in the, you know, the change of the old studio system to the independents, mm-hmm. That's kind of a big deal. Here's its cast. Making their film debut, Candace Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
Hal Holbrook. This is the youngest I've ever seen Holbrook. Wow. He has black hair in this one.
No.
But also Joan Hackett. Elizabeth Hartman, for you fans of A Patch of Blue and The Beguiled. Shirley Knight. Young Jessica Walter.
Mm.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-Play Misty for me.
Mm.
Richard Mulligan is in this.
Oh, nice.
And Larry Hagman. Hagman plays one of the husbands of the group. He is a frustrated playwright who becomes a drunken, cantankerous adulterer, and you know, not a nice guy. So it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. It's decent. It's some subplots are better than others, but it's more probably a note of the young, watching all these young faces, a young Candace Bergen and Jessica Walter and everybody else. So, and there'll be more Sidney Lumet films to talk about into the archives, because I like those. So and I like Sidney Lumet. So all right. So Kobe, do we have a what is Kobe watching?
I have not seen anything.
You've been working
last week.
Dude, yeah. Now I should say I added, because you don't have enough movies from me.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, and you're also getting tugged. Your cinematic soul is always being fought over.
Mm-hmm.
And now the stakes have been raised since you guys are engaged.
And the stakes have been raised.
And the stakes of it, because I got you a big piece of meat for the fantasy football game.
Yep.
But Kobe and I have a bet every year with our fantasy football teams, and winner gets a steak. And if Kobe wins, I give him a Pam Grier movie to watch, and if I win, then I give him a scary, freaky movie he would never pick to watch.
Ooh. Last year it was Psycho.
And you're fine.
Yep.
So, meh.
It was also around this time, 2 years ago, that you forced Blue Velvet on me.
Yeah, I did.
Man.
Yeah, I did. So I'm batting 500.
Yeah. Mommy.
Well, come on. So this year, of course, I lost. So you got Pam Grier, the early Pam Grier film, The Big Dollhouse.
Yes,
because there's two of them: Big Dollhouse, Big Birdcage. Basically, Filipino women in prison movies.
Yes.
Yes. And Fair Sweet Bianca, of course, has said, I don't get the whole Pam Grier thing. Kobe, do not show this as her first Pam Grier movie. Show her Jackie Brown.
Yep.
All right. Words to live by.
Oh, man. Hang on.
It's a minute before the show ends.
I didn't have the folder open here.
Good God, man.
Silent Breed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
You're an idiot sometimes. Sometimes. All right, go see a good movie. You deserve it. It's a Wonderful Life. Tonight, tomorrow, 7:30, 2:30 Sunday, and then next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7:30, Byram Hall, Anderson University. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Thanks, Kobe. Thanks, Mike. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, WFYI.org. Win Lions, win Pistons, and can the Red Wings play hockey?
Nope.
Shut up.
We gone.
We gone.
Good night, Fort Myers.